Welcome to Today on Broadway for Friday, October 28th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini. James is off seeing something tonight. I honestly don't have the foggiest idea what it is, but I'm sure it's wonderful either way. So I am again here by myself, taking you through all of the day's theater news. Late last night, in fact, after I'd already recorded this episode, NBC sent out a press release stating that they had named their 2017 live musical, and that not only will it be produced by the normal cast of characters Craig Zidane and Neil Marin, but J-Lo, Jennifer Lopez herself, would also be executive producing and starring in Bye Bye Birdie Live. This will come out early December, presumably for a 2017 holiday release. And of course, the great Harvey Fierstein will also adapt the Broadway book for television. Obviously, there's not much other information out there right now, but feel free to start freaking out and dream casting Albert and Conrad and all the McAfee family. So that should be a lot of fun. I think that's a really good choice. It doesn't exactly have the cultural cachet currently that Hairspray does, but it's a fun show that could have a lot of really cool stars in it. So now I just want them to name who's going to be in A Few Good Men Live in February. I'm crossing my fingers for Leslie Odom Jr., but we'll see. Now back to the previously recorded part of the episode, where we talk about the reviews for the star-studded Broadway revival of Falsettos, which opened last night with a cast of seven that includes the great Christian Borle, Andrew Rannells, Betsy Wolfe, Tracy Toms, and of course the phenomenal Stephanie J. Block. This is a show that was incredibly highly anticipated for a while, and apparently it is worth the wait. Leading the charge on strong reviews is Charles Isherwood from the New York Times. He wrote, "There's hardly a moment in the exhilarating, devastating revival of the musical Falsettos that doesn't approach or even achieve perfection. This singular show about an unorthodox family grappling with the complexities of, well, just being a family, unorthodox or otherwise, has been restored to life some 25 years after it was first produced, with such vitality that it feels as fresh and startling as it did back in 1992. The achievement seems almost miraculous because in the intervening years, America has gone through cultural changes that might, in theory, have made the show with its sweet and sour score by William Finn and its economical book by Mr. Finn and James Lapine seem a relic." Time Out New York's Adam Feldman continued the praise, writing, "Few musicals have the range, idiosyncrasy, and emotional punch of this profoundly unconventional and personal work. Directed by Lapine, the show's revival is very much about a specific Jewish family in the early 1980s, and while its story of a man who leaves his wife and child for a male lover may be less novel today, its larger truths continue to resonate. Seeing Falsettos now is like opening a time capsule and finding a mirror." That's beautiful, Adam. Jeremy Gerard of Deadline was a little less excited, writing, "Not because this revival isn't terrific. It is, mostly. It's got tons of heart, unimpeachable performances by a cast of seven, including the best kid actor since Fun Home Sidney Lucas. But while the production left me teary in all the right places, and laughing in all the other right places, it never actually took flight. It's earthbound." Jesse Green of Vulture seems to think that the problem is not in the stars, but in the construction of the central character, writing, quote, "As written, Marvin is so nasty and erratic in the first act that the plot, which depends on so many people wanting his love, won't turn. Christian Borle can't resolve that contradiction and thus comes off a bit unsteady, at least until he regains his footing in the second act. The other principals, whose roles are more tightly written, are excellent throughout. Andrew Rannells delivering a super high-gloss whizzer without reducing him to a boy toy, Stephanie J. Block deftly coloring in Trina's insecurity and stopping the show with I'm Breaking Down, Brandon Aronowitz offering an unusually sexy Mendel, and Anthony Rosenthal making a crazy confident Broadway debut as the sweet, but not too sweet, Jason. In the second half, Tracy Toms and Betsy Wolfe are lovely as the lesbians from Next Door." The Wall Street Journal's Terry Teachout didn't seem to enjoy himself as much as his colleagues, saying that at one point in the show, quote, "a hideously painful situation is portrayed with a sincere but cloying sentimentality that occasionally curdles into kitsch." So it seems like all of the critics liked the performances, but couldn't find a consensus about the show as a whole. Some loved it, some were lukewarm. It'll be interesting to see if the raves went out when it comes to Tony time in this ridiculously crowded revival category. Okay, up next, in Michael Riedel's latest column in the New York Post, he provides some details on a story that we first told you about nearly 2 months ago, and that is that Mel Brooks, Susan Stroman, and Thomas Meehan are taking a second whack at their musical Young Frankenstein. Stroman directed and Meehan co-wrote it with Brooks, and despite an incredible cast on Broadway, it was nowhere near as successful as their previous collaboration, The Producers. Back in early September, Brooks let slip at a screening of the film that the team was back at work on it, and that it would have a run in the UK before potentially trying Broadway a second time. The first time around, critics thought that the show was bloated and not all that funny, so Brooks and company have been cutting songs and liberally rewriting. According to one of Riedel's sources, quote, "It's tighter and brighter and, with a good cast, has a shot." Well, it will have at least one quality cast member when original monster, Tony Winterschuler Hensley, returns to the role when the show opens in Newcastle, England later this year. If all goes well, it'll open up in the West End in 2017, and then will begin contemplating a New York transfer. Having just seen and reviewed an incredible production at the University of Central Florida last week, I can say that yes, there are quite a few clunker songs, but the bones for a great musical are there, and there are plenty of laughs. So I'm excited to see what these three geniuses come up with the second time around. Also in his column, Riedel provided an update on the ongoing Great Comet saga. Basically, on Wednesday, Ars Nova and producer Howard Kagan had an agreement in place about the show's billing, but then on Thursday, Kagan refused to sign it. He's still planning to vindictively schedule the cast album recording for the same day as the Ars Nova benefit, and a source told Riedel that Kagan is enjoying being Broadway's reigning villain, saying, quote, "He thinks he's David Merrick." Not something to aspire to in terms of the personality department. Pressure is mounting for star Josh Groban to take a stand, which would certainly endear him to the cast, Ars Nova, and 99.9% of the Broadway community. But thus far, he has sat back and waited to see if Kagan can figure out how to stop being a Trump hole all on his own. And yes, I just made up a new profanity, so feel free to use it as you see fit. In what is becoming Australia's version of Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, Tony and Pulitzer Prize winner Marsha Norman has officially left the creative team of the King Kong musical that has been in development for what seems like half of my lifetime. Always, of course, with an eye on Broadway. If you are unfamiliar, the show had a tryout production in Melbourne, Australia, not Florida, 3 years ago and features a ginormous half-robot, half-puppet King Kong apey type thing, and has had a number of high-profile librettists and composers at different points in its development, including Prelude to a Kiss's Craig Lucas and Jason Robert Brown. In a statement, the show's producers said, "What has become evident throughout the process of readings and workshops is that King Kong, with its distinct physicality, doesn't fit the traditional book musical format. We are greatly indebted to everyone involved in this exploratory phase of the work, including the brilliant Marsha Norman, who helped bring us to that understanding earlier this year. As a result of this earlier development, we feel confident about the new structure we've found for the show. The next steps will be announced soon." For her part, Norman didn't seem to have any hard feelings about the development, saying, "The reason so many people are interested in trying to make this work is that the creature is spectacular. If you see him, you want to get involved." She added, saying that she had written 9 different drafts of the show, which tried to paint Kong not as a killer, but as a cautionary tale about human fear and exploitation. She added, quote, "It's a good and interesting and deep puzzle. I couldn't get it to work. I had a lot of fun, though." Hopefully someone gets it to work, because if this King Kong creature is as impressive as Marsha Norman makes it out to be, maybe it'll be a big hit over here, and who knows, maybe they'll finally find something that's appropriate to put into that barn of a theater, the lyric. Okay, in some show and casting news, Kara Lindsay, who is my dream host for a podcast that I want to eventually produce, will step back into Glinda's bubble on Tuesday, November 1st, when she returns to the Broadway production of Wicked. She's previously played Glinda both on Broadway and on tour. Also joining the company on Tuesday will be original Dreamgirls and Thoroughly Modern Millie star Cheryl Lee Ralph as Madame Morrible. The pair will take over for Carrie St. Louis and Judy Kaye. Yesterday, Second Stage Theater announced a cast that will be joining Tony winner Reed Birney in the off-Broadway revival of Tracy Letts' Man from Nebraska. Directed by David Cromer, the production will begin performances on January 26th and is currently scheduled to run through March 26th. Joining Birney will be Heidi Armbruster, William Ragsdale, and J. Smith Cameron, who is one of the stars of the singularly best show on television, Rectify, which began its final season on Sundance TV earlier this week. If you haven't watched it, and I know I've beat this drum at every point I can, the first 3 seasons are only 22 episodes in total. Binge them and watch the final season. It is the most painfully beautiful and tragically inspiring piece of art that I honestly think I've ever seen. And apropos of nothing, she is also the wife of Kenneth Lonergan. And speaking of Kenneth Lonergan, that's what we call a transition in the biz, his new film Manchester by the Sea, which will be released next month, is getting tremendous Oscar buzz, and one of the film's stars will be making his stage debut at MCC next year. Lucas Hedges will lead the American premiere of Anna Jordan's play Yin, directed by Trip Coleman, who apparently is trying to get into the Sam Gold, Ivo Van Hove club of directing every show possible. The show is currently scheduled to run from January 12th through February 19th at the Lucille Lortel Theater. Finally today, it looks like one of the most influential brands in American popular culture will be setting up shop in a very pricey part of Manhattan. After months of speculation, yesterday it was announced that Ryman Hospitality Properties, Inc. will be bringing Opry City Stage to Times Square in April of next year. The four-story simulcast retail space performance venue will be at 1604 Broadway. Sbarro's is currently on the ground floor, and based on artist renderings, it looks like they might be getting bumped out of their lease a little early. Opry City Stage will feature both Nashville food and music, including live entertainment, simulcast performances from the Grand Ole Opry, and other venues in a two-floor bar and restaurant space. A world-class listening room and private event space will occupy the fourth floor, and the ground level will hold the complex's retail area, featuring many of Nashville's signature brands. In reading up on this a little bit, I didn't realize that until a couple of years ago, there wasn't even a country music station in New York City. That kind of surprises me, having lived in either the South, Midwest, or Great Plains for all my life, where country music is kind of king. So this will be interesting to see how this plays. What do you guys think? With all of the different huge brands taking over Times Square, do you think that the Grand Ole Opry will last? Because I figure if Toys R Us can't last, is Grand Ole Opry going to? Who knows? There are clearly much smarter people making these decisions than me. Okay, that's all we have for the week. Remember to check out This Week on Broadway on Sunday, when James and the panel will be interviewing the one and only Jen Tepper about her new book, The Untold Stories of Broadway, Volume 3. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt and subscribe to Some Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you on Monday.